Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore in the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I'm Ann Stickney, one of two lore-focused writers from Blizzard Watch, and I've got both of my wonderful co-hosts with me today. First up, let's switch it around and introduce Joe first this time, because I think I did Rossi last week. Anyway, hey Joe, how's it going?
It is going fantastic. How about you guys?
Pretty good. And obviously, you know, since I already said his name, we'll just sort of add him to the introduction. Hey, Rossi, how's it going?
well, we talk a lot about eyes and stuff in other podcasts, so let's just say that this week I have now experienced a pain more intense than third-degree burns.
I got in non-eye related trauma news. I got my hair done yesterday, and it looks like it's on fire. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, congratulations.
That actually looks good. So, as opposed to what I went through, where my eyes were blood red and not didn't look as good.
It took me 5 hours sitting in a salon chair, but it looks really good.
See, and I may not have experienced, you know, fabulous hair or excruciating pain, but I did accidentally glue my thumb to my stomach yesterday while I was working on that stupid beetle model.
Oh, no.
Because a little bead of super glue fell out, and it was just at this weird, weird angle. So I go to, like, put the model down, and my shirt starts coming with it. And I'm like, aw, damn it.
Did you manage to extricate, I'm assuming, yourself from this situation?
I did. I'm just losing my thumb is a little bit raw today. But
it
was, but you know what? It's not the worst model-related injury I've ever had. I've actually accidentally sliced my thumb to the bone with an X-Acto knife before.
Okay, so let's just stop talking about injuries altogether today.
This week, the lore of getting hurt.
The lore of pain.
That actually fits in perfectly with what we're going to be talking about today.
I was going to say, lore of pain. If we want to talk about something painful, we might as well just start right off the bat with saying there's going to be Legion spoilers all over this thing, all up in this mess. We already know there's going to be Legion spoilers.
There might even be spoilers for, like, future expansions in this.
There might be. We don't know. So if you're kind of avoiding that sort of thing, please shelve this episode. Once Legion launches on the 30th of August, go ahead and come back. Or actually, for this one, you may be able to get away with coming back after the Broken Isles open up on August 9th. But I don't know. It's one of those things. You know, we put the disclaimer on every episode because we really don't censor ourselves, so we just want to let you know right up front. So this week, we're going to be talking about a couple of different things lore-wise that came out of Blizzard. First up was the last of the Legion comics, and that was Anduin, Son of the Wolf. And first off, hello, can I say how happy I am to see an Anduin comic? Like, grown up. Look at him. He's all grown up and saving China. Or Azeroth, whatever you want to call it. We'll throw in some Mulan there while we're at it. Okay, so what'd you guys think of this one?
I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, I had thought it would be something involving Stormheim. So I was glad it wasn't.
Yeah, we were all predicting. We're like, oh, yeah, maybe it'll be something about, you know, the different factions that are over on the Broken Isles. Or what? Nope, it's Anduin, all right. So
I also kind of still don't like Anduin. I'm sorry, I just don't like him. But he did better in this comic than he's done in quite some time. So I'll give him credit for that.
I think that in this comic, he's actually developed into a fully rounded character, at least a little bit, which I think is good, because for the longest time, my problem with him wasn't so much that I hated him, as he was just very one-dimensional. And here, you can actually see, like, okay, well, he's gone through a lot of things over his years here in Azeroth, and this is actually the culmination of them, and he's actually learned from them and developed from them and has grown from them. So I was a little... I don't want to say, like, happy about that, but it made me, yeah, you know, happy is the right word. It made me happy to see that there was more to him.
I think as far as Anduin goes, I think I should just say straight up, I'm really glad that Christy Golden decided way back when that she wanted to expand Anduin as a character, because he was pretty much her doing right off the bat. When she wrote, I forget which book it was she wrote. She wrote one of the books, and
Prelude,
she said,
to Cataclysm, the Shattering one?
Yeah, I think it was The Shattering, where he first made like a big appearance. And she said that she'd like to take Anduin and actually do something with him in the book. And they said, okay, yeah, you can go ahead and do that. And I mean, he'd made a minor appearance in the Warcraft comics, but he was just like sprightly young lad. You know, he didn't have a whole lot of weight to him beyond dad. You should really try and do this diplomacy thing, because I think it's a good thing to do and it makes sense, dad. So you should go do it, dad. And Varian was finally like, fine, okay, I'll go do this thing for you. So it was nice seeing Anduin like start to develop as a character in Prelude to Cataclysm, particularly since he got some really good scenes in that book. But since then, we've watched this kid grow up, because I remember my first character in vanilla World of Warcraft, right? My mm-hmm. Night Elf. When I finally got to Stormwind, first off, when you walk through the gates of Stormwind for the first time, you get hit with that music theme, and it was just like, whoa, this place is amazing. and then you go like, it's like, oh, there's a castle. I'm going to go see what's in that castle. Who's the king here? And you go there, and it's just this little generic child model named Anduin of Stormwind,
yeah.
Yeah, and it was like, why is there a 5-year-old, or how old is this kid? Why is he in charge? This is weird. And then it kind of, you know, started that whole exploration of the story and whatnot. But when Varian made his return, I kind of thought that Anduin was just going to sort of slip into the background, and he didn't. They didn't let him do that. They let him actually come into his own. And in this comic in particular, we see Anduin as a full-grown man, and he's weird. Got the weight of the world on his shoulders now.
That's weird to think about, though.
What?
This is actually his second trip on that throne.
I know.
Yes.
Technically speaking, he was crowned king when his father disappeared. They straight up crowned him.
Yeah.
And so when his father came back, obviously he was more than happy to be like, nope, yours, all yours.
But this time he's in charge.
Daddy isn't going to come in and take the throne back.
No, and he's not going to get to fly away with Rathian and go explore the world like they talked about in the Missa Pandaria book, the Garrosh trial. Yeah, in War Crimes. Because he expressed kind of like, he told Rathian in the book straight up, he's like, I don't know if I want to be king. And Rathian's like, why don't I just come get you and we'll just travel the world and it'll be great. Because, you know, you're my friend. And Anduin's like, you have friends? I'm your friend? You know, there was like that whole back and forth, and it was really cute.
I kind of want this perfect bookend, though, of like, in Legion, I just want Rathian to show up and offer to be like an advisor to him.
And just have this
perfect bookend of King Anduin with a dragon at
with a black dragon.
Because that's always worked out well for the King of Stormwind.
Yeah, that works great for Stormwind. But yeah.
My aunt used to say nice things about this place. I don't really remember her saying it, but it's in my racial memory.
I just Rathian's like, not Rathian, but Anduin. Anduin's one of those characters who, like I said, we've watched him grow up from this throwaway NPC that whose biggest role in vanilla was being ushered out of the Stormwind throne room when everything went crazy when Onyxia was revealed, to all of a sudden he's stepping up because he has to.
Let me at least say this. As the guy who isn't the biggest Anduin fan, I did like how they worked his character in the story.
Yeah.
He isn't naive. Because this is the last... This guy does not have the right to be naive at this point. Like, not just because the world needs him not to be, because he's been through enough that he shouldn't be able to be naive. And they basically established, yes, he still believes everything he used to believe, but no, you can't just walk in as a demon and fool him.
He's kind of tempered it.
Yeah, he gets everything. He understands the world is not the kind of place where you just get peace because you want it real bad anymore.
Well, it's not only that, too, but, like, he's also not opposed to actual physical conflict at this point. Like, he understands the place for it or the need for it, which is kind of important.
I've had a lot of people actually ask because he was just because how he attacked in the comic. They wanted to know, is Anduin a paladin now? What do you guys think?
I think he transcends anything remotely near paladin. I think he's still a priest, but I think he's like priest plus.
I don't know. I don't agree. I think they're going to make him a paladin. I think they're because that's how paladins started for the Alliance. Paladins were just priests who picked up hammers.
They were a mush together of...
Sure.
And I think that...
Well, and they were also warriors that learned how to use the light.
Yeah, the original start of it was priests. Like, Uther was a priest. Uther was straight up, you know, and they said, you know, we need dudes to pick up hammers.
Let's take these priests and teach them how to be warriors, and we'll take some of the warriors who seem to be more inclined towards that sort of thing and teach them the ways of the light. And he just kind of created this mashup.
I think that's basically the reason I think that that's the way Anduin is going is because he's studied the light intensively his whole life at this point. He studied it for years. He studied it under Velen. But the Draenei have a different philosophy about the light than humans do. And I think that very much Anduin is combining the Draenei and human perspectives. And that's why I don't think he'll stop being a priest. I think he'll actually be a priest who is a paladin.
See, and that's why, but that's also why I'm saying that I think he'll be a priest plus is because he's not learning it the way that humans did. Right. And it wasn't so much that, or at least in the way that I'm looking at it, he didn't really learn just about it through the paladin teachings or the priest teachings. He learned about it from the dwarves and then the Draenei. And that was where his influences came from for this. And looking at what he does towards the end of the comic, that doesn't seem like a paladin move to me. That seems more like a light mage to me. And it seems like something that Velen would be possibly capable of, but not necessarily a paladin or a priest on their own
and
right from the humans.
He's studying under Velen, or he was studying under Velen, and he probably still is, because, hello... Let's talk about the last page of that comic. Why don't we?
Yeah, we're going to have to talk about the last page of the comic.
So the last page of the comic, it doesn't say when. It just says many, many years later, somewhere in the future, you see Anduin in an Exodar that still looks like it's broken for whatever reason.
Well, yeah, but also if you look at it, there's lots of little light cables going from different places
that
weren't there before.
There are. And it's Anduin, only it's a much, much older Anduin, an Anduin that is scarred and has been through many battles. And
let's call him by his real name, High King Anduin. High King Rin. That is what Velen refers to him as.
And I mean, you know, you talk about how in Mists of Pandaria they had that whole thing with the whole Trials of the High King or whatever, and Varian was like the High King. It looks like Anduin has stepped up and just completely taken his place and kind of eclipsed it even and moved beyond it to a powerhouse. But, I mean, when you go back to Velen, Prophet's Lesson, he has that vision, and that vision is of Anduin dressed all in white, leading the charge on the battlefield. And what do we have on this last page? We've got Anduin dressed all in white,
ready to lead that charge.
Should be pointed out that technically speaking, right now, Anduin's father is called High King of the Alliance.
That is his
title. So it would make sense to a degree. I mean, there's always the situation of people like, why would we listen to him when he's basically like 19 years old? But I honestly feel like the comic is interesting because it basically shows you, not only does it show you that they're taking the battle to the Legion somewhere, it doesn't say exactly where it is, I don't think.
Oh, we know. It doesn't.
Yeah, we know.
We know.
Didn't say. But what was interesting about it was the idea that he talks about other, you know, all the things we've sacrificed on the way. So who knows how many fights took place. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. we don't know anything between the end of this comic and now. Like, we don't know how long a time it is. Anduin looks to be in his 40s, if not his 50s. I mean, he's got like,
oh, he's completely white haired.
Like, his beard is white. He's up there in years.
Yeah. The beard is white. He's got, as you guys pointed out, scars all over himself. I mean, he's standing there next to Velen. And that's the other thing is we talked about how Velen had trained him. But between what we see in Legion and what we see in this comic, it doesn't feel like Velen trained him. It feels like Velen appointed him. Like, do you know how in Warlords, Yarel basically gets the swoosh to the forehead?
Yeah, the holy boop.
Yeah. It feels an awful lot like in this world, since there's no Yarel, he had to go with Anduin. And Anduin is his chosen successor.
You know, I was actually thinking about that too, just based off the armor that Anduin's wearing too. I mean, those
Which
are
very
like,
paladin-y armor.
They're very, it's very paladin and army, but it's paladin-y armor, but it's very specifically Draenei paladin-y armor.
It's the crystals on the shoulders.
Yeah. So
I have those. I actually feel like I have that set. I was looking.
Yeah, they exist. They do exist. The other thing that I find kind of fascinating, if you look at Anduin's face in that last panel, he's got two scars, one on each cheek.
Mm-hmm. Who else had that?
Yeah, it's almost kind of a mimic of what Varian had, except Varian's went all the way across his face. But I'm like, where did he get those? What happened there? He's seen some stuff somewhere along the line. A lot of stuff.
We should probably talk about it, because that ties into the comic.
Yeah.
Like, we have that whole bit. The comic is basically broken up into, like, it's Anduin reading the note. From his father, the note that his father's writing in the cinematic. It cuts off and starts off with him reading the note, and then he's interrupted by somebody. I believe that, I don't remember exactly because I'm not looking at the comic right at the front of my face, but I remember that the person who interrupts him basically reveals himself as a Nathrezim.
Yeah, it's basically, he comes in as a Stormwind foot soldier who's supposedly bringing news in from the Broken Isles for him. Anduin's not even looking up, he's still reading the note, and then that foot soldier then reveals himself to be an Anathrezim and attempts to take Anduin's life with his weird skull spell blade thingy.
Yeah, and Anduin takes him out with almost contempt, mm-hmm. which we should point out. For all that I give Anduin crap for not, you know, being ready to fight, Anduin takes this dude out in like 5 seconds.
Well, not only that, there's in that sequence, there's one important still too, where it talks about like he's grabbed the hand and he's looking at this now stunned Nathrezim, and that face, that's his dad's face. That is 100% a Varian Wrynn face that he is giving this thing, like, I don't have time for you.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you in there at all. It's actually, it's fascinating just because they actually did they chose to make Anduin look a lot like his father here.
Yeah, they did.
And the cover actually is interesting because he's got his father's sword.
Yes, I did notice that as well. He's got his dad's sword, looks like sitting right next to him.
And they bring, I mean, he takes the sword. He's using the sword against the Nathrezim. I mean, he points it at him and he's like, okay, you're going to tell me everything I need to know. Because he pretty much just kind of encases that Nathrezim up against the wall and goes, hey.
In light webs.
That was pretty cool. But, I mean, he doesn't really hesitate.
Nope. Doesn't even slow him down.
And you know, when push comes to shove and he finds, and he, you know, he's got that Nathrezim that's like taunting him and then offering him peace by saying, okay, well, if you join us, then you can live in peace. You'll just live in peace as like one of us. And he's like, no, I don't think so. And then just like holy punch and obliterates this Nathrezim.
Yeah.
It was pretty fantastic. But yeah, he had his father's sword there too. It was, it I don't know. I feel really bad for Anduin though, because he had just started to get back on good terms with his father. And he and his father always had kind of like that shaky relationship. And he reflects on this while he's reading that. Because that note that Varian writes, the one that he reads in the Legion cinematic, it's kind of an admission that I know we didn't always get along, but I'm really proud of you and what you've accomplished, and you are my son and you've taught me things. and I didn't expect you to teach me things. And it's just sad. The whole thing is sad. So, I mean, if we're going to talk about pain or whatever, this whole comic was painful because it's just, it's Varian's last words, pretty much.
Well, it's interesting because the light punch you were talking about, I can't tell if he's using the sword or not in that. It looks kind of to me like he is, but I can't tell.
It
and
doesn't.
The light punch? No, he put it down on the desk.
He put it down on the desk, and then he, like, you could see there's a panel with his hands where he's, like, coalescing the light into it, and then he just, like, punches the Nethrasim.
But, I mean, the point is, like, we're just before he does it, I'm looking at the panel right now. He says, you know, and the wolf is gone forever. I am the light that remains. And then it cuts to his hand. You're talking about the light thing. And it reads that last bit from Varian, the you must be willing to fight.
To preserve that peace, you must be willing to fight. And maybe Anduin didn't have that particular piece of the puzzle, but he sure as heck seems to have it here. I don't know where Anduin's going to go in the future, but I guess if anything, we have a really good indicator that no matter what happens in the future, Velen's going to survive and Anduin's going to survive long enough for this final panel.
What is interesting, too, is that even Velen looks older.
Yes.
He does.
Velen rarely looks like he's aged much, but he's actually even put on more of a beard. It's like, Velen, dude, you are looking old already, man.
But I mean, it makes sense with everything that he's been through. I mean, and it looks like this, the last sequence of panels ties in directly with the priest order hall stuff, which, you know, okay, I mean, it makes sense there. But yeah, like he's witnessed the re-deathening of his son. He's, you know, essentially looked at this world that he's fled to, you know, come under assault from the very things that have taken his son from him. And yeah, he's going to, if he didn't look older, I would have a problem with that. I'm really happy that he does.
I don't know. This is a spoiler, but what the heck, warning's been given. If you do that quest where his son dies, you find out, one of the things you find out is that the central core of the first Naru has crashed to Azeroth, and you find it and you take it to Velen, and he's like, yes, this is, I forget the name of the Naru, I feel bad about this, but he says, this Naru, who is the first of the Naru Prime, I believe he says. And that's, so if the Naru are out there, the ones that are not with them now are probably dead. Like, there's a huge implication that the Naru are not doing well here. So if whatever Velen's doing here is probably the last stand. So that's like the whole let it begin thing when Anduin says let it begin, he's basically saying, you know, this is one way or the other, it's the beginning of the end.
Yeah,
this is it.
Yeah.
Side note, couldn't help, but when he shows up in that last panel, Velen does, and he goes, hi, King Rin, it is time. I'm like, what are you going to do, throw him in a pool? Anyway.
It's like, well, yes, this pool of holy light. We just happen to have it. I've always wanted to dunk kill Jaden in this. I don't know why. I've always felt the need.
So anyway, Anduin, Son of the Wolf, you can download that for free on Blizzard's website. And yeah, I'm thinking, where do you guys think that they're going on that last page? Because I'm thinking Argus.
I have tweeted this many, many times with my lovely little Photoshop job of three of my raiding friends inside of a convertible saying, get in, losers, we're going to Argus. Because get in, losers, we're going to Argus.
It does feel like, based on the stuff that Joe has mentioned and based on this panel, it does feel an awful lot like they're going to Argus. It just seems to be the most logical place to go.
Well, I mean, and, you know, given what we heard in the Illidan novel, the one by William King that came out, the prequel for this, Argus was kind of where he was aiming for, too. So it kind of makes sense.
It's going to be hilarious if at some point it's like Anduin in Illidan against the forces of evil, and looking next to the guy, he's like, yes, I'm surprised too. Can we do this?
You know, I would totally pay money for a buddy cop movie of Anduin, Rin, and Illidan, like, going against the Legion. I would pay actual money for that.
Like I said, I just imagine, like, everyone's standing there staring, and even Anduin's giving them a look, and everything. Illidan's like, yes, I know. I didn't expect it to be me either. Can we move on?
Like, yes, it's awkward. Yeah. Can we just get the show on the road? Yeah, I'd like to see Anduin, Illidan, and then throw Rathian in there too, because, you know, that bunch, that particular trio, would just be a bundle of laughs and fun.
I feel like I need to be the voice of pragmatism here. Could we consider tricking them? I mean, because I like to trick people. It's worked well for me so far.
Oh, we could get them to collect us, you know, tablets or runes or something. That worked out great for me in Pandaria. Shut up, Rathian. Okay. Okay, so moving on. Obviously, that wasn't the only lore thing that we got from the last couple of weeks here. We also saw the debut of the Harbingers miniseries. We knew that Harbingers Gul'dan was going to be coming out when we recorded the last show. It has come out. And then since then, we've also seen Harbingers Khadgar come out. And I think the final one, because if I remember correctly, there's only three this time, according to the Legion website anyway. The third one is going to be coming out next week. The other thing that we're going to see is apparently tomorrow is the launch of the audio drama that they're doing for this. And this is the first audio drama that Blizzard has ever tried to do. So this should be interesting to see what that's all about.
Well, they've upped their voice quality quite a bit.
They have.
Over the past year or so.
They have. And
this will be a good test of it.
The thing is like...
Jim Cummins better be a voice there too, darn it.
Yeah, their voice acting is so on point and so good right now that it only makes sense that they do some kind of an audio drama where they bring in the voice actors and they bring in, you know, the big names go ahead and read whatever short story they're doing. I think that's pretty cool because it's something that I could possibly like download and listen to in my car.
Someone talked smack to me about the Mists of Pandaria voice acting the other day.
Whoa.
And I was like, are you out of your mind?
Are just, you kidding just, me?
Like, wow. First up, that was when they up, like they upped the ante.
First up, Jim Cummings.
Yes.
Like, so your argument's invalid right there. Secondly, everybody else. I mean, by herself, Teoshi is worth like the entire game. I don't know what you're talking about. The voice acting in Mists of Pandaria was great. I mean, yes, okay, Laura Bailey did a really weird read at the end of the raid, but that's, you know, that's it. That's
that was the end of the last raid. Everything prior to that was just...
Solid.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going...
Jaina throughout that expansion was great. I mean, you know, I liked
Jaina Varitha. Was great, Varian was great, Anduin was great. The stuff on the throne, on the Isle of Thunder... All of that stuff was great. All of the Mogu stuff was great. Rathian was, hello, Aaron Phillips is just amazing in that role. And
I got nothing but praise for Mr. Pandaria voice acting. And quite frankly, Warlords, whatever its flaws are, the Warlords had superlative voice acting.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. I can't. I can complain about Warlords at nauseam, but I will never ever say a dirty word about their voice acting. Like Mists of Pandaria was like the switch hit, and then since then it's just been up, onward and upward, and it's been improving each expansion on top
of really that. I'm really gonna miss Warlords because I'm gonna miss Ural and I'm gonna miss Aaron Fitzgerald's reading of that particular character because I really liked her a lot.
She did a very good job, and quite frankly I feel like we need to have some continuation of that character. I really don't like that we're never going to see her again because she was such an interesting, well-developed character.
If she's not there for the final stand against the Legion, I'll be mad.
If you need us, just give us a call. And I'm like, well, why aren't we calling her now? Because obviously stuff is going down on Azeroth. We could probably use a fleet of angry Draenei, especially since we just got done saving their butts. So why isn't she around, you know?
Yeah, I definitely agree. But yeah,
I'm hoping maybe in a patch, a whole fleet of them will just show up.
I feel like I derailed us from what you were talking about, though. About
I did a little bit, or
no,
I did, and you did, and we all did. It's Lore Watch. This is what we
this
do.
This is what people expect. We're just giving the audience what they want. That's
okay.
All.
So, let's go ahead. I want to talk about Gul'dan. I want to talk about Harbinger's Gul'dan because this was amazing and terrifying, and it was the backstory for that alternate Draenor's version of Gul'dan, and that was the piece that we didn't have the entire expansion. We didn't know where he came from. We didn't know why he wasn't associated with Ner'zhul at all. And if he wasn't associated with Ner'zhul at all, well, then how did he get in touch with the Burning Legion? Like, what happened? Did they just call him up on the phone and say, hey, so you were evil for us once before. Don't ask. It's a really complicated story. But we would like you to come be evil for us again.
Honestly, you know what I think? Seriously?
What?
This is something I thought from when I first saw it. That is what they did. Honestly.
Yeah.
Because I was watching it and I thought to myself, what if this is exactly what happened to Gul'dan the first time up until he gets to the Throne of the Elements? What if the first time Gul'dan is mistreated by his clan, is driven from them, but in that world, Ner'zhul is there at the Throne of the Elements because his wife is dead. He would be going there to see her because the Throne of the Elements is right next to Ashagun, right? So he'd go to visit her spirit. He's said to do that all the time, and he runs into him.
Yeah,
they meet. He takes Gul'dan as an apprentice, maybe not even because he sees potential in him, but purely out of pity. Like, oh my God, this boy, look what they've done to you. All right, yeah, you can be my apprentice. And in this world, Nurzul's wife isn't dead. He isn't going to the Throne of the Elements because she's not there. At this point, they haven't even had a split yet because the warlords haven't happened. So he's not there. Gul'dan gets to the Throne of the Elements and there's nothing for him. He has no place there. And so the Legion reaches out. And the Legion is, we know they cross all timelines, right? They're everywhere.
They're ever present. Yeah, yeah.
So they know. You know what I mean? It's perfect. And it was really well done. I mean, I watched this and I thought to myself, my God, they actually made me feel bad for Gul'dan. I didn't think that was possible. I didn't think you could make me feel bad for Gul'dan, but no, here I am. I actually feel a little bad for him. Not you know, too bad for him.
Just bad enough.
Yeah.
I didn't really necessarily feel bad for Gul'dan. All it did for me was kind of confirm what we already knew, that he was evil, like personified.
Yeah,
because he traveled all the way to the Throne of the Elements, and the elements showed up, and they kind of looked at him, and they took a really good look at him. And when they took that really good look at him, they started to pull away because they were like, oh, no, we don't want anything to do with you. And then what did he do? He tried to snatch out and, like, take that power. And when he did that, that was pretty much all the confirmation that the elements needed to, you know, confirm what they'd already seen, that, oh, no, this guy is bad news.
Yeah, I get that. But, I mean, I think Joe was probably going to say something along this line, so I'll let him talk. But
this gave me a question about, like, what if, right? Like, and we're talking about what ifs here. So the scene before he gets to the actual Throne of the Elements is he passes out, right? So what if he never actually made it to the Throne of the Elements? What if he never actually was there and everything that happened to him was a trick of the Legion? It's not like we don't know that they do this all of the darn time, where they try to present you with different things. And we'll probably talk about that again in the next one if we talk about the next Harbingers one. But what if this was all an elaborate thing to play on that despair of this crooked, broken, you know, abandoned orc who has no sense of family, who's told that the elements will love you and they see everything. The Legion, like, we just talked about this with the Anduin comic. The Legion sees all. So the Legion sees this, and they're like, this is a perfect opportunity. This is our gateway into the world. We can manipulate this. Let's present him with a reality in which the elements reject him. Because as a shaman, and as somebody who has really, like, done the whole shaman thing, the elements don't traditionally care. That's why there's dark shaman. They just want to barter with you, talk with you, or you're going to enslave them. Even at the throne there, right? Like, and that's the other thing too. In all of the timelines, the Fel corruption never really touched directly into the Throne of the Elements because it couldn't. So why?
It was never in Nagrand. It was never in Nagrand.
Exactly. So why all of a sudden was it there in this universe?
Okay, so here's where I, like, go back and talk about Garrosh Hellscream and how when he came to Draenor, like this alternate Draenor, what did he do? He took a shard of that mirror, right? Mm-hmm. He took that shard and he went to his dad, only he didn't know, well, Grommash didn't know that he was talking to his son, and they went trekking to the Stones of Prophecy. Guess where they're at? Just south of the Throne of Elements.
And yeah, they're in
Nagrand. What did he do there? He used the mirror to show him Azeroth, like our Azeroth, and the stuff that had happened there and everything else that had gone on. And Grommash basically got to witness this entire other world. So obviously there's something wonky going on with the whole Throne of Elements and the Stones of Prophecy and everything else. It seems like in this aspect, and also maybe even with Gul'dan earlier, I don't know whether, like, the Legion is influencing that area and we just don't see it, going on there?
Here's the thing. We know that there is, in fact, an influence in there that is malign and terrible and isn't the Legion, because we know what it is. Underneath the ground are the Pale.
Oh, yeah. And
the Pale are being drawn to the Darkened Naru. The Darkened Naru is a conduit to the Void. And what sleeps in the Void? The Void Lords.
Mm-hmm.
The Legion's most mortal enemies, who don't trust them, who don't fear them, and they actually even think they're useful sometimes. Oh, sure. Go ahead. Burn some worlds. That's fine. Burn this world.
We're okay with that because, you know, we're kind of on the same page as far as that goes. We'd like to destroy everything. You'd like to destroy everything.
Yeah, but we're doing it despite you. Okay, we don't care. But going back to it for a second, one of the reasons I actually did feel bad for Gul'dan is really simple. I'm not saying he isn't evil, but why is he evil? You finally get more than, I love power. You actually see, well, of course he loves power, because he's been powerless. Of course he wants control, because he's lacked all control.
He's never had it before, yeah. So that's the one thing that he craves above all else.
He's been the kicked down dog of an entire clan of orcs. He's been the nobody who an entire village basically treated so poorly that the shaman said, you have to leave. Look at him when he says that. The shaman's like, I've done all I can for you. You have to leave. You go to the throne of the elements. Maybe you can find something there.
Yo, buddy, I tried, but I can't do anything else for you. Speaking of coming, he did a really good job in that.
Yeah, but I mean, to be fair, I mean, the only reason Gul'dan is alive is simply because of that shaman invoking the ancient orc rite of exile, not necessarily murdering him.
Yeah, like, but it's fascinating to see. You actually get to see this, like, Gul'dan has always been presented in the past as a fully, you know, fully realized evil force. And you've never really gotten any backstory on him as to why he's a fully realized evil force. In the main timeline, if this is the same history up to a point, even the main timeline of Gul'dan now makes more sense. Of course he betrayed his mentor.
Of course he betrayed his people, too, because why wouldn't he?
Yeah, what connection does he have to them? Why would he care what happens to them? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if this is the backstory for any Gul'dan you happen to see, suddenly they make sense. Of course he's, like, only out for himself. That's what they taught him. And so whether or not the Legion, like, actually
he's
caught him...
He's on a continual, never-ending hunt for that one thing that he never had.
Yeah. And even, like, leaving aside whether or not he actually got to the Throne of Elements and the Elements rejected him or the Legion put that in his head, it doesn't really matter. I mean, it's interesting to think about, but it doesn't really matter because either way... Whichever way it went down, Gul'dan's response is always going to be the same. What's in it for me? And as soon as he's given an answer that satisfies him, he'll take it.
Oh, I get something good? Cool. Burn them all.
Yeah. And it's the end of the short is really well done for that because he thanks that shaman.
Yeah.
That was like the creepiest part of the whole thing.
This never would have happened without you.
Thank you. This never would have happened without you. You were right. I totally found my destiny, and you're going to die now.
Yes, but I don't want to seem ungrateful.
Like but I'd like to thank you first before, yeah. You know.
Well, I mean, he wasn't killing him for the sake of killing him. He was killing him for taking his power. I mean, it was the fell. I mean, needed to. It's like, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to take your power now. I'll make it painless for you.
Well, he doesn't even make it painless. He doesn't care about that. He just wants to let him know. It's just this little moment of, like, it twists the knife just enough to make it so much worse. It's one thing to see your people die, but it's another thing to know it's because of you. If they just killed
Gul'dan. Do you think he said it because he was actually feeling a moment of gratitude, or was he just trying to twist the knife in a little further?
I think both.
Why not both?
A little bit of both?
Why not both?
I think that is how he expressed his gratitude, by destroying everything that guy held dear.
Side note, I like to think that perhaps Gul'dan originated from the Flower Picker clan, and this is why we've never seen them.
The brutal Flower Picker clan.
Well, he destroyed them all.
Can't pick enough daisies in an hour. You must be destroyed.
Yarnmaster Grawl, no. The High Knitter of Orgrimmar's people were destroyed. That's why I was of the Flower Pickers.
Nobody's ever heard their name, and nobody ever will, because frankly, it's embarrassing.
I just want to hand out flowers now to people.
So as far as Gul'dan goes, do you guys think, you know, when the Legion spoke to him, obviously they had things to say to him and they were like, hey, we're going to promise you power. We're going to promise you all of this. So Rossi, you're saying that when the Legion spoke to him, or was it Joe that said this? When the Legion spoke to him, you're saying that they said, here's everything that you accomplished on this other world. And we'd like to offer that to you again, only in a way where you're victorious.
Did they even bother to show him what he'd accomplished on the other world?
We don't know. That's the thing. Like, we don't know. Like, here it is.
They promised him power. That's all it said, really, was that he was going to get power in exchange for being the, you know, the harbinger of their fury.
Yeah, I think that honestly, that strikes me as that's all they needed to offer him. Like he's the perfect storm.
Oh yeah, he's at the depths of his despair. He's been powerless and weak. He almost just died to birds. I mean, he's right.
Here's my thought though. I think you might be onto something though, Joe, because he knew that Garrosh was Grom's son.
Yes.
And he knew who Khadgar was.
Yes.
He had knowledge that kind of went beyond what an orc who just, you know, grew up on Draenor should have. So I'm wondering, moment, did they show him key points from this other Gul'dan's life? They didn't show him the part where, oh, yeah, no, you kind of went power hungry, went to steal, you know, something from the tomb of Sargeras, and then you became a skull that haunted everybody forever. They didn't show him that part because that was kind of a bad part. But they showed him the good parts where it was like, look at how powerful you were. Look at how you put this horde together, and look what you did. This was so cool. You should totally do this again.
It boils down to another question, though, too, because we've established that to a certain extent, the Legion is sort of hive mind, right? Like, they have a certain collective knowledge that they share, that they base off of. The question to me is now, this opens up, how is that information delineated and blocked off from all the other facets of the Legion? Because we know that, like, the Nathrezem know everything. And we've seen that. Like, they're the most trusted, most vile, and they have the most knowledge out of any of the base troops or lieutenants or generals out there, minus, like, old Gul'dan or, you know, Illidan after he consumed the original Gul'dan skull. So, I mean, the question here is, if they are showing that, he is now part of the Legion. He has accepted the Fel. He is part of this group. He's been converted. How do they keep him from knowing everything else, even because if they've only shown him the piece?
I don't think it's hive-minded. I don't think that I think basically the Nathrezim serve as an intelligence agency. I think that's been established. It's pretty common. The Nathrezim know what they know because they go out and find out. They spy on people. It's not as simple as if they were all knowing, then we'd be dead already. They would know exactly who to kill. They would do it immediately. They wouldn't wait around. They aren't all knowing. What they are is extremely good at their jobs. And the thing is the interesting thing is that we know one thing about the Nathrezim. They like worlds that are basically in the process of being destroyed by the Void Lords and the Old Gods. They love those worlds. They spend time on them.
They're drawn to them.
That's where Sargeras found them. And that's where he tortured one of them for information. So we don't know how loyal the Nathrezim actually are to the Legion. That's a thing to think about.
Yeah.
Nathrezim don't die. And they can keep coming back. And
That's an interesting question, though, too, because after the events of the Illidan novel, is that true anymore?
Is what true anymore? That they don't die?
They don't die because their world is gone. Their world has exploded. They have nowhere else to teleport back to, essentially.
Yeah, they do. The Tichondrius comes back in this expansion.
They're in the Twisting Nether. As long as they're in the Twisting Nether.
They come right on back. Nathrezim come back. It doesn't matter what you do. Blow up their planet. Doesn't matter.
Because Tichondrius came back and Verimothris, like all of them came back.
In the broken shore, which means right now.
And by the way, spoilers, guys, for what's coming in a couple of weeks here. But yeah,
I feel like that ship has sailed when we talked about Varian already.
Probably, yeah.
But the Nathrezim, as long as the Twisting Nether exists, they come back.
You see them all.
Yeah, and that's what's really interesting to me is we don't know. Like, the Legion itself is in a really weird position where they might be pursuing a goal they can't actually achieve, while at the same time they've made it so, you know, they're an incredible threat that has to be stopped at all costs. But so the whole thing with this movie with Gul'dan, them recruiting Gul'dan, is they basically admitted there's something we can't do and we need you to do it. And think about what that says about Gul'dan. He's that bad. He's that vile a person, an orc, that they needed him. Like, he is what they needed. That to me is just, usually the Nathrezim go to the planets themselves and create cults and do stuff like that. And this time they didn't. This time they used Gul'dan.
So I wrote a Know Your Lore on Gul'dan this week. And you can read that on the website there. But I kind of questioned something at the end of the column, and I'm going to bring that up here so that we can actually like talk about it, because I kind of wanted you guys' opinions on this. The fact that this time around, when the Legion contacted Gul'dan this time around, they skipped the whole Ner'zhul part of the equation. And I feel like they did that on purpose because they, as they saw in that original timeline, in that failed version, recruiting Ner'zhul didn't work out. Tricking Ner'zhul did not work out. So obviously, you know, let's just skip him because he didn't work right. Let's go to the one guy who did work for us until a certain point. Let's go to that guy directly. And they went and they contacted Gul'dan. And I'm just going to read this last section here. I said, it's these actions that make me wonder about the nature of these alternate realities in the Warcraft universe. Was the Draenor of Warlords a separate existence on its own, or did it come into existence because of the Legion's intervention? Was the entire purpose of Warlord simply a trick of the Burning Legion, a method of bringing Gul'dan back into play? And then I said that the entire reason that Gul'dan became as powerful as he is because of our interference. We showed up. We set him free. We started dismantling the Iron Horde. The more we dismantled the Iron Horde, the more powerful Gul'dan became. You know, we got to the point where Gul'dan could, like, take over as leader and just kind of, like, let the Legion run rampant in Tanan. So I'm wondering, were we actually doing something good and noble when we went to Draenor to stop the Iron Horde? Or were we inadvertently puppets of the Burning Legion? Was this all part of their plan? Did they have something to do with Kairos?
You know, I was wondering that same thing months ago, because we are a predictable quantity. Like, you know what the heroes of Azeroth are going to do when presented with certain situations. We don't sit back.
And the Legion's been studying this.
We've been at
forever. Yeah,
forever. Since mortals have begun fighting back against the Legion on Azeroth, they know what we're going to do. We're going to rise to the challenge. We're going to gather our forces and we're going to throw caution to the wind and you know, obliterate it if we can. So there's a possibility of that, at least in my mind, where the Legion could have potentially maybe tried to set something of this up. And it doesn't take much, right? Like you Kairos, you say, you know, you have another dragon appear to him, and because the aspects are gone and they're all weak, everybody else is maybe a little bit weaker. They may not be able to see that he's actually an agent of the Legion anymore. And, you know, I heard stories that, you know, we used to be keeping these alternate realities from, you know, popping back up and trying to yank him back into the main timeline. I wonder if we could keep one of those open. Oh, well, idle thought. See you later. And then you go back and Kairos is like, wait a minute, that'd be a great idea. We could go back and get the orcs before they were all obliterated and became demons. So we can get, like, them. Oh, no. Oh, yeah.
So, like, this is where it all ties into, though, and where it starts getting kind of confusing to me. And I'm still trying to kind of unravel this aspect of it. And Rossi, I want your opinion on this, too.
Well,
obviously, the Infinite Dragonflight originally, I mean, Nos Dormu stated that the whole infinite thing was because of the old gods. Well, we defeated Deathwing. Nos Dormu, along with the other aspects, they expended their last of their powers to do this. And we thought that the infinite were taken care of because we thought we had done that in End Time when we defeated Murazond. Yet in War Crimes, they show up again and Kairos is working with them. So are these actually the Infinite that we're familiar with, or are these agents of the Burning Legion maybe already putting things into place? What do you think?
Well here's the thing. First off, Nos Dormu is not reliable when it comes to telling us anything about the Infinite Dragon.
No, because he kind of exists everywhere, everywhen, all at once.
Well,
so.
Not just that. When you go to End Time and you fight Murazond, Murazond does not cry out to the old gods for help.
No.
Murazond calls out to Amonthul. He does not at any point he's not saying, you know, for the glory of the old gods or your timeline will be destroyed. He says, you know, Amonthul, they have defeated me.
And the only reason that I say that we assumed it was the old gods was because of that other short story that we got. Mm-hmm. Where Nos Dormu just, like, flat out, or no, was it the short story? No, it was the end of Thrall, Twilight of the Aspects. Nos Dormu says, it's all the old gods. And everybody goes, oh, of course. And yeah. I sit there scratching my head going, yeah, I figured that out a long time ago. But okay, Nos Dormu, go on.
Well, here's the thing, though. But here's my point. When you go into the various Caverns of Time dungeons to stop the Infinite Dragonflight, specifically when you go to Black Morass, and you're stopping them from interfering with the dark portal, Aeonis says, this clockwork universe must be unmade. And it's always stuck with me. The Infinites are not, the Infinites are not out to just break stuff. It's the clockwork nature of it that they don't like.
It's the there is one true timeline aspect of things that they're not 100% on board with.
Which is, you know, a creation of the Titans. It's a creation of Amon-Thul's agent, Nozdormu. Now, you're talking about the Legion. Who's the leader of the Legion again? Sargeras. And Sargeras went up against all of the Titans. Now, if Sargeras wants to defeat the Void Lords and the Old Gods, the best way to do it is to have an infinity of choices to pick from in the first place. That's the first thing to consider. The second thing to consider is this. We don't know how the Legion is affected by time travel. As beings that exist across all realities, if you travel back in time, do they know the future? Do they know the future of an Azeroth that's 35 years in its future?
Do they see the infinite possibilities of everything, well, or do really they good... need the infinite to do that for them?
Yeah, that's a really good question. For that matter, too, like we talked about, you know, did the Legion show Gul'dan, like, what the other Gul'dan had done? Could they? Because they're 35 years in the past. They might not know what Gul'dan did.
Well, I guess it also depends on how they got there, too, right?
But if the Legion engineered all this, if the Legion basically convinced Kairos somehow, possibly working through the Infinite Dragonflight, possibly some other way, if they're the ones that put this idea in play in the first place, then they probably would know, because they wouldn't do it if they couldn't benefit from it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but maybe the time travel bit is a little bit weird, too, because, I mean, for lack of a better term, we know that Warlords was an alternate reality slash time shift, right?
Yeah, it was an alternate reality, but it was still, the events were still 35 years ago.
Right, but what if the Legion needed that gateway open in order to get agents there to begin with? Like, they understood the possibility of what could happen. Like, we understand that we can open up these portals. We can't do it, but this particular group can, and then send agents through that way.
Here's the thing to think about with that, though. We know Kairos goes back at a point before Warlords starts. We don't know exactly when Gul'dan has the experiences we see in this movie. What if the reason for Kairos's trip in the first place, you just mentioned, so they could send agents through, what if it is so the Legion can contact Gul'dan?
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Here's the thing. What if the Legion that contacts Gul'dan is our Legion from our time? I know that the Legion's the same throughout all universes, but they might have actually be future Legion contacting Gul'dan. He may have always been working for future Legion, who at the moment they made contact would suddenly be able to contact their own selves, because they're themselves. The Legion exists across timelines, but they don't necessarily exist forward and backwards in time at once. They still seem to have a temporal existence.
Right, because they're present at that particular time, those events, like they're there right then and there.
But once, like, If Nozdormu, like, if I came back from time, if I right now went back in time half an hour and talked to myself, it would still be myself half an hour ago. If agents from the Legion go back in time 35 years, they can then tell themselves, and they'd know that, you know, that's definitely me, because, I mean, I can feel him. We are the same being. So you're telling me that none of this will work? Yes, but here's the plan. That could be what happened. It's just one possibility, mind. The other possibility is still Old God involvement, because, again, the Old Gods don't fear the Legion. The Void Lords do not fear the Legion. They don't fear Sargeras. He serves a purpose as far as they're concerned. They're perfectly happy to let him rampage around destroying everything. Again, I go back to, what's the bloody dungeon? Arcatraz? Yeah, Arcatraz.
Yes.
You know, no force in the universe can make us bend our knee, not even the mighty Legion. They are not afraid. This plays again to the whole, are the Nathrezim, who are the Nathrezim really working for? You know, we've seen people switch paymasters a lot in this game, but imagine that the Nathrezim are actually that corrupt, that they're willing and able to betray the Legion to the Void Lords.
Well, I mean, it would make sense, right? Because they're drawn to the Void to begin with. They love it. They feast on that sort of, that power, right? They feast on that vacuum. So
they were forced into the Legion.
Yeah.
They were forced. Sargeras broke Mardoon and made them join on penalty of death, because he'd finally figured out how to kill them.
Yeah,
and
so I mean,
keep that in mind, the only being who knows how to kill the Nathrezim forever is Sargeras.
Yeah, and that gives you perfect incentive to
betray him. You don't like
it. Yeah, absolutely.
So there's a lot going on here.
Now that we've thoroughly probably broken your brains with all this talk of time travel, alternate universes, infinite dragon flights, and everything else, we kind of actually need to wrap it up for this episode. It's about that time. I know we could keep rambling forever, but we're going to have to save the rest of it for the next episode. So Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. And if you're wondering, obviously Anduin, Son of the Wolf, you can download that for free on the web. Website Harbinger's Gul'dan. You could view that on the official World of Warcraft YouTube account. They also have Harbinger's Khadgar, which we didn't get to today, but we will totally get to next time. And if you're interested in checking out Blizzard's other novels and media, for you guys, the listeners of Blizzard Watch, Audible's offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. They have a lot of Warcraft books. They have Illidan, obviously, we mentioned that previously. They also have War Crimes on there. If you haven't read War Crimes or seen, you know, pick that up yet, you can get that as part of that free trial. You can download many of Blizzard's titles beyond that as well, and you can sign up for that trial at blizzardwatch.com/audible. Next week, or well, not next week, in 2 weeks time, we'll go ahead and we'll talk about Harbinger's Khadgar, and we'll also talk about the other Harbingers, because that's coming out this week, I'm assuming the last one, and we'll probably also touch on that whole audio drama that they're coming out with tomorrow. We'll see what that's all about and what it's like and whether or not we like it, and give you guys lots of words of wisdom. So yeah, we're gonna go ahead and wrap it up. Rossi, final thoughts.
I just realized that if we go with the assumption that the old gods are responsible for the infinite dragonflight and the Nathrezim are working as sleeper agents for the old gods, that they could easily be colluding with each other. And also, this would all connect to Karazhan and Harbinger's Khadgar, because Karazhan exists outside of time and outside of dimensions, and they could be trying to, that's why they want to take Karazhan, so they can use it. Yeah, it is. I could have gone on for another half an hour. Sorry, guys.
It's okay. Next time, we'll talk about it. I swear. Joe, final thoughts?
I mean, Rossi basically went exactly where I was going to go to, so I can't really say much else. But, oh, man, like, there's so much that could possibly be going on here. And for, I want to point this out, for all of you that were tweeting at us worried that we weren't going to have stuff to talk about once Chronicles came out.
Yeah, that didn't happen.
Final thoughts from me. Eventually, we're going to have to get back to Chronicle, but not yet. So... Thanks for tuning in, everybody, and we will see you in 2 weeks.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.